I'm Vermont Edition co-host Bob Kinzel. Just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Robins, vultures, red-winged blackbirds. What birds have you seen or heard or hope to observe as winter melts into spring? Whether you fly solo or partake as a family, there's ample opportunity to observe bird life in Vermont, including in your own backyard. Today, bird diva Bridget Butler returns for our annual spring birding show and my last interview with Bridget as the host of Vermont Edition. And speaking of backyards, I guess one of the silver linings of new technological experiments and doing a live show means Bridget is actually going to go outside and do the show from her own backyard via Zoom. She'll give us real-time updates on birds she's observing and answer your bird-related questions. Bridget Butler, so nice to have one last chance to do this show with you.
Oh my gosh, Jane, I can't believe this. Like, when I counted back, it's been 11 years. Do you realize that? It just seems like it was yesterday that we started doing these interviews.
I know. We've been together through your stint in Maine and then your return to Vermont and all the different ways that you have kept birds front and central in your life and livelihood and in your parenting and in the ways that you think about the world. God. Do you want to share your sort of philosophy about birds and birding?
You know, it's really evolved. And I think part of the cool thing about doing this show for that long has been to kind of watch how it's changed and grown. So I've really always thought that birding needed to be more accessible and more open. And my experience, many of you have heard me tell this story before, is that my first experiences with the birding community were not super great. It was always competitive and like this one-upmanship. And it wasn't until I came to Vermont and met all the cool laid-back birders here in Vermont that really changed for me. And I found I could really start to get into and enjoy birding. And then over the years, it continued to shift and change as I got deeper into my practice. And I think now it's kind of more of this holistic practice of how are birds this entryway into nature connection and how can I best help people enjoy that and make that connection themselves?
You know, one of the things that I've always appreciated in our conversations, Bridget, and in the way that you approach this is that sort of welcoming, inclusive sense of anybody can be a birder. Anybody can enjoy birds and learn about birds. And in fact, even if you know a lot about birds, that doesn't mean you know everything. And there's at least one time in every show we do where somebody asks a question and you say, oh, I don't know. You know, either I'm going to consult my bird book or does anybody else out there have any ideas about what this might be? And, you know, that's been a really refreshing approach to what it means to be an expert, but then carrying that in through the rest of our lives and all of the ways that we comport ourselves in welcoming other people to helping us get to the right answers. I really appreciate that about you.
Oh, thank you. You know, one of my friends, Julie, said to me, she's like, you're a humble birder. Like, you're not a braggadocious birder. You're a humble birder and you're always trying to connect others. And I think that not knowing, as someone who is a public speaker and someone who is trying to educate, that's a tough place to get to. But I think the first time that you say, I don't know, it's really a relief in a way, right? And then the other thing that happens from it is that you then empower people to feel comfortable with not knowing. And then you can take that next step of helping people figure out how to know, how to learn more. And so I think every time I come on the show, I learn something new myself.
That's very cool. Well, let's talk about birds since theoretically that's what we're here to do. And first, let me ask you, what are you seeing? So you're outside, you've brought your computer or your cell phone, I don't know what you're using, outside, and you're sitting. Are you in your what you call your sit spot where you often sit to observe the birds that are around you in the neighborhood?
Yeah, I'm about maybe 10 feet from the sit spot because the sit spot's right up against the door. If I sit against the door right now, the dog's going to go nuts. So I moved a little bit back from that, but I have a view of my feeders. I have a view of the brook. Stevens Brook runs right along the edge of my property. And, you know, we're in St. Albans City. We're on the edge. And I've got a nice little wooded landscape in the backyard. And like I said, bird feeders that have been up all winter. So, you know, just since coming out here to set up, and I have heard the spring song of Dark Eyed Junko, which is kind of like this twittering little tinkling bell. It's a trill, but it has like a little bit of a musical quality to it. So those guys have been here at the feeders all winter, but now they're starting to sing. You mentioned Red Winged Blackbird as like that big cue for you that it's spring.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this year, like, I'm enjoying who else is singing early. The other one that I heard since sitting out here was the beautiful, plaintive, mournful, long coo of the mourning dove.
Hmm.
That woo, 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 woo. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's the first time I've heard that this year.
Do you keep track of all of them? I mean, I feel like, oh, I'm supposed to be writing these down, right? The first day that we see the red-winged blackbirds, the first day that we see the turkey vultures, which for me this year was February 25th, which seemed early, but nice. I don't know, maybe it's February 25th every year.
Yeah, so, you know, red-winged blackbirds typically are that last week in February, or actually third week in February, arrival. And so they are one of the earliest ones. You mentioned turkey vulture too in your opening, and that's another one that I think of as an early arrival. American woodcock is another really good one to listen for that's coming back.
I thought I heard a woodcock just recently, but I'm not sure it was.
Oh, good.
It was that moment where was it? And then it didn't happen again.
So yeah, we keep track, you know, we use this, do this backyard big year list. And Jane, I got to just brag a little bit. We are crushing it with our backyard big year list. And so it's a list that we keep in like a common room of our house. Everybody can add to it. The rule is that you have to see or hear the bird from the yard or from inside the house. And then you can add it to the list. So I think like the first day of January, we got like 15 species. And so we were already ahead of the curve there. And now we added two new species this week, which are just like mind blowing, Jane. I'm like, I cannot believe one of these birds I got to add to my list. But one of the new birds was brown creeper for this week. We saw one right outside. And then the other one is part of this super flight of winter finches. And it's one that I've never, ever had in our yard, in our neighborhood. And I've rarely seen before and literally saw it the other day in the pine or the spruce trees right on the edge of my neighbor's property, red crossbill. So this bird is like crazy juicy, like that raspberry tone. And then the females or the immatures, they have a like a mustardy orangey yellow kind of wash to them. They're smaller than a robin, and they've got crossed bills. And the whole reason why they have that is so that they can harvest pine nuts from pine cones, right? So the little seed that's in there underneath each of the scales. This is a great thing to try. Try going and ripping a pine cone apart on your own. And then imagine a bird with a crossed beak that basically serves as like a wedge and a way to leverage the scales open. And then they can stick their tongue in there and like scoop the seed out. So they were hanging from the spruce pine cones in my neighbor's trees. And I was like jumping up and down for joy. And I'm very excited to add that to our list for the first time ever.
So if you were in St. Albans City the other day and you saw somebody jumping up and down in their yard or, you know, through the kitchen window, it might have been Bridget. We got to know, you mentioned that you're in St. Albans City, and Walter wrote in to say, we live in the hill section of Burlington within a few blocks of downtown, not exactly a bird sanctuary. Yet within the last few weeks, we've seen and heard white-winged crossbills and bald eagles in our yard. Not expected. We have lots of very tall pine and fir trees, and we think that's what may have attracted them. I should also mention that from my downtown office, I sometimes get to see a peregrine falcon chasing pigeons. Mm. But, you know, you've talked about this before too, Bridget, that you don't have to live out in a really rural part of the state to be able to get some great bird watching. You can be in downtown Burlington or St. Albans City or Rutland City or anywhere and still see birds.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some pretty awesome things that happen in cities. You know, wintertime, we're coming out of that time. right now where crows are going to start to disperse. But, you know, cities are the spots where winter, large winter roosting flocks of crows come. So that's been a really awesome thing to enjoy this winter. I think, you know, the other piece is just learning how to look and listen and maybe, well, slow down and take the time to see what's around. Peregrine falcons have figured out how to, you know, coexist and make the most of our buildings. They're great nesting places, and cities have plenty of birds to take out. So for food, so you think of all those pigeons that are there and maybe a house sparrow or two, there's plenty of food available for them. Here in St. Albans City, we have, oh my gosh, the merlins are back, right? I kind of hope they go screaming over here during our interview together. But this is a smaller falcon, a dark back. They're really super quick. And we have them nest every year in the city here as well. I've watched Cooper's hawks dive bomb between buildings here in the city, going after pigeons as well. So I think one of the silver linings of the pandemic probably is that, you know, folks are staying in one place, but they're also trying to find a way to connect and get outside. And I think, you know, birds are there, they're everywhere. And a lot more people have come to appreciate or get to know the birds that are right outside their door this year.
Let's go to Brian, who's calling in from Bakersfield. Hi, Brian. Go right ahead.
Hi. Just a quick identification, if you would. I've got a bird that's been driving me crazy, and it sounds like this. Did you catch it?
Yeah, so it's two-toned. Do it again, Brian, because you've got something else beeping in the background, which is not the bird you're trying to identify, right? But so do it again.
No problem.
Oh, that was beautiful. Are you saying hey, sweetie, to me? That's what it sounds like. Hey, sweetie. Hey, sweetie.
Hey, sweetie. Or she did it. He did it.
Oh, I like that one.
That's good. Or cheeseburger. Cheeseburger. That's another one. So you just whistled a set of nice clear notes. That would be a good way to describe what you're hearing. Clear notes that can be whistled. You got those three notes in there together. And this is black-capped chickadee switching to their territory and mating song. And these guys tend to do it kind of early, right? I always love, like, walking around in February and starting to hear the hey, sweetie coming through the trees and thinking, oh my gosh, you guys, yes, I know it's coming. Spring will be here soon. Very nice.
And so it does do that two-toned, not just the sort of one-tone, hey, sweetie, but then it can do, you know, what Brian said, which is sort of go down, you know, go down a bit and do the hey, sweetie.
Yep, it's part. And the tone can change, right? You switch it up a little bit to be more attractive to the females, or like if you're challenging another male, maybe that tone or pitch changes. But you've got that set of notes, one or two notes that kind of start with and then drop. Musicians would probably be like, well, it drops an octave, but I'm not sure if my ear is fine tuned to that quite yet. But yes, they do drop down from a higher note to a set of lowers.
It's been really cool. One of my running routes in the mornings, it takes me by a place where I often see a lot of chickadees. And then, like you, Bridget, in the really deep freeze of early and mid-February, I was starting to hear them more often. And it was a very cool moment of like, oh, they're still here. And they know something new is happening, even if, you know, it's minus 10 wind chill today. So that was that was fun. Merlin's calling in from Lisbon, New Hampshire. Sure. Hi, Merlin. Go right ahead.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. My first indication of spring was yesterday when a chipmunk got on the bench, took one of my wrenches, and ran with it.
Really?
Yeah. I had to bribe him with some black sunflower seeds. But this is a nature preserve up here with National Wildlife Refuge. We're registered.
Awesome.
And so we have, you know, the tall trees and brush and things like that. But the sighting I wanted to tell you, talking about a Merlin sighting, last summer I was standing outside the shop taking a break, and we had a large oak tree in the side yard here. And I was talking to somebody, and a Merlin hawk flew down over the tree and sat on my shoulder.
No. That's amazing.
It sounds like you're in the Disney version of Snow White here, where it's like, you know, the animals are taking your tools and sitting on your shoulder. It's pretty amazing,
yeah.
Merlin.
It's a riot, yeah. And, you know, we have, you name it, we got it.
Wow, it sounds pretty amazing. I want Merlin's life if that's what he gets to experience, Bridget.
Yeah, me too.
Let's go to another one. Ezra's with us from Jericho. Hi, Ezra.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show. I wanted to just call in and put a plug in as a brand new birder to the, speaking of Merlins, the Merlin app. This was brand new to me, and a friend told me about it. But I recently got into birding a few months ago, and it has just opened my eyes to the wonders of birding and really helped to identify birds and hear their calls. And, you know, not knowing much about birds and how to identify them, it makes it super easy to figure it out. So for all those new birders out there, I'd encourage you to download it. It's all free.
Ezra, thanks. That's Bridget, awesome. Have you used the Merlin app?
Yeah. Yeah, and I use it a lot in my classes. I think, you know, this is a really wonderful tool that is out there now. Like Ezra said, it is free. You can download different bird packs depending on where you are in the country. So if you're traveling and you're going someplace else, when we can all do that again, you can download a pack for wherever you're going so that it's fine-tuned to what you might find around you. It taps into eBird sightings, so it can kind of rank birds for you on what's most likely. And the other really cool thing that I like about Merlin, Ezra mentioned that you can learn the bird songs and calls from it, but it even goes a step further. So for those of you who are visual learners, they also provide you with the spectrogram of the bird song or call. So basically it's showing you kind of the wavelength, the frequency and wavelength of the sound that you're hearing. So, and it shows you while you're watching, so it shows you the spectrogram while you're listening to the sound. So it's a great way to kind of cement that vocalization in your head with the visual piece as well.
That's so cool. There's an app, isn't there, that's kind of like, wasn't it Shazam for music, where you could play the music and it would tell you what song you were listening to? And there's one for birding, too. You can play the bird call and it'll tell you what you're hearing.
Yeah, there's a couple new ones out there. They're still tweaking them a bit. There's Song Sleuth app that is pretty good. And then there's another one that has come out. I believe it's through Cornell, too. Yeah, BirdNet is the other one. And so basically what you can do is you can record the song that you're hearing or call, and you can use your voice memo or another type of audio recording app, and then upload it through the Song Sleuth or BirdNet app, and it kind of helps analyze what you're hearing and then give you some choices to kind of choose from.
So, Bridget, we have a couple of people who have sent us notes about birds they didn't expect to see in this area. So let's tick through a couple of them. One is from Jack, who says, I think I've had a Carolina wren at my feeder most of the winter in Charlotte. Can this be true?
Yes, totally true. Can totally happen. So we have little pockets where the Carolina wrens will stick around throughout the winter. One of the great ways when you have questions like this that you can figure these things out is to use eBird. So if you go to Vermont eBird, you can use the Explore feature and you can type the bird that you're interested in into that Explore feature. And it will pull up a map for where the most recent sightings are for that bird. You can even fine tune it like right down to the week and the area that you are in Vermont. So it's a great way to be like, am I really seeing this? Is this possible? To see if other birders are seeing it as well. But yeah, we had a Carolina wren. I feel like it's chipmunk sighting right now. So it's not stealing any of my audio equipment. So that's really good.
Right. Well, if you don't, you got to slather them with peanut butter for the chipmunk to steal.
I know.
It.
I'm going to keep an eye on that guy. Now I'm worried. But yeah, so I don't even remember what I was talking about now. Carolina wren. See, this is the problem with doing the show outside. I'm like, ooh, look, there's a bird and a chipmunk. We did have Carolina wrens here in St. Albans. I'm up near the northern end of Lake Champlain, And then they kind of pushed out. And I think it was probably because we got a lot of snow this year. So they had to like move to someplace that might have a little bit less snow cover. So that's another thing that can influence who's showing up and when. Really pay attention to the weather and what the weather's doing. Okay, Jane, I got another sighting for you. So my friends that were here the other day trying to see the red crossbills, I can literally see them right now. They're back in that set of pine trees that are right near the Barlow Street School. Oh my gosh, they're coming.
The crossbills or the friends? Yard.
The crossbills.
Not the friends. Got it.
The crossbills are back. So if you came by to try to get those on your list, they're here right now. This is awesome. Okay, why didn't we do this sooner, Jane? This is kind of
crazy. We should have been doing this for 11 years. So another, you just mentioned it's important to look at the weather when you think about who's visiting your backyard. And Allie in Craftsbury is wondering about, you know, more global weather than just what we've been experiencing in Vermont. Allie says, a varied thrush has been visiting my feeders for over a month. It appeared after a storm system blew in from the west. Do you think that's how it arrived? Will it find its way home? And I can't quite tell if it's a female or a juvenile male. I'd love to hear your thoughts and any insight you might have about my little visitor. And Allie sent some pictures along that I think I forwarded to you, Bridget, but I don't know a varied thrush. They're not usually here.
No, they're not usually here. So this is a bird from the Pacific Northwest, Jane. So this bird is a really long ways from home. But what's kind of crazy is that they're kind of rogues during the winter time. So they breed up in, Alaska, Northern California. So along the coastline there. And then they're short distance migrants. So they push down into southern parts of California, right along the coastline. But there's always a couple of these rogue varied thrushes, and they go crazy. They go for these long distance trips. And there are sightings kind of dotted all across the rest of the United States, in the Midwest and here in the Northeast. In Vermont, we have 20 plus records of this bird going back to like the late 60s. And it's a beautiful bird. So it's in the thrush family. So think like robin size. It's a little bit more round in the belly, but man, this bird is striking. So it's like this, like caramely orange color on the throat with a caramely orange eyebrow, and then like black through the face, black over the top, but the black has these weird blue tones to it. So you get this blue, gray, black kind of feeling across the back of the bird. And then a really cool kind of like black necklace. Can you tell that I opened my bird guide to give you all those beautiful details? So, you know, this is what we do, right? Like one of these birds is going to stand out to you. And it obviously stood out to the person who sent them in. It's not something that you normally see. And this is why I really advocate for people to like kind of get to know the birds that are right in your backyard. Like, who are your usual suspects? Get to know like their vocalizations and what they look like, because then when something different shows up, your brain kicks in and goes, hey, pay attention. You got to check this out. And that's actually how I found the crossbills the other day. It was their call note that I heard. And my brain said, that's not normal for your backyard. You should go figure out what that is. And I was rewarded with a nice little flock of crossbills.
Let's go to Ross. Ross is calling in from Hardwick. Hey, Ross, go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. My question is concerns whether birds can recognize the people that fill the feeders. My question is prompted last fall. I think I was doing my last mowing of the season, and I was by this lilac bush, which is on the corner of the house, near the bird feeder, but not next to it. And while I'm mowing around that bush, a couple chickadees came and sat on the bush and started chirping at me. And I was kind of wondering, were they telling me to, hey, hurry up and fill up the bird feeder, it's getting cold. And I mean, they really did seem to be directing their energy right toward me. And during the winter, when I go out and out the back door by the bird feeder, I'll frequently, as I get out just on the back steps, hear them starting to chirp. And I'm, you know, are they saying, hi, glad to see you outside today or what, but just wondering, do some birds perhaps recognize the person responsible for keeping them well-fed in the winter?
Ross, thanks for the question. What do you think, Bridget?
That's awesome. I think Ross is like totally set up to start hand-feeding birds. yes, they do, right? So they're going to associate when that feeder fills up, there's this being that comes out and has control over the seed, right? So if we think about, you know, survival strategies, you know, that's pretty smart. Follow the other animal that's got food. And this happens in nature too, right? So different birds, for example, like corvids will follow wolf packs because wolf packs often leave carrion behind that they can then pick and eat off of. Vultures then key in on the corvids to say, hey, let's follow them because they're picking up on where there's food. So yeah, your chickadees and maybe even nuthatches too, if you have them, they're another great one that sometimes you can get them to trust you enough to feed from your hand. So it sounds like he's set to do that. One of the things you could try is when you go out to fill the feeders, before you fill the feeder up, hold a little bit of seed out in your hand and see if the birds will come in and take seed from you. And after a while, they'll begin to trust you. And you'll get a super treat of feeling that tiny little bird's feet and that little peck from the beak as they grab a seed and fly away.
That is like hashtag life goals for me, Bridget, to hand feed
totally.
Some chickadees. Yeah. And then Eve is also calling with a feeder question. Eve is in Orwell. Go right ahead.
Hi. So I have a window feeder, and we've been seeing house finches, goldfinches, chickadees, and one nuthatch. And I'm wondering what else to expect. Like, I'm keeping notes, and I'm waiting for more birds, and I'm really excited.
Okay. So you said house finch, goldfinch, nuthatch. Chickadee. Did I miss something?
Yep, that's what we see.
Okay, so this is your set of usual suspects to build off of. I think this is really great. So you have two birds in the finch family. You have white-breasted nuthatch, which has that, you know, that crazy creeping behavior that they do on the trunks of trees. Black-capped chickadees are kind of neat because they come and take the seed from the feeder and go someplace else to open it. Nuthatches will do that too. Who else would I would keep my eye out for? Maybe another type of nuthatch, which is red-breasted nuthatch. This is one that also pushes down during the winter time and can kind of be show up here and there. They're not super common all the time, but it's another one to keep your eye out for. And it has that similar behavior to the white-breasted nuthatch in how they feed along tree trunks. Let's put another one in the family with chickadee, which would be tufted titmouse. So I would look for that one. That's a little gray bird with a nice little crest around the same size as a black-capped chickadee. Who else? Let's see. Oh, let's, you know, throw some mourning doves in there, like the one that I've been hearing in my yard here today. So a little bit bigger than a robin. And geez, well, let's not leave out a thrush like a robin. That's another great core bird to look for and learn from to kind of build your birding family or set of neighbors right near you.
And just a PSA here from Fish and Wildlife, they just sent out a press release just a day or two ago saying Fish and Wildlife recommends that if you have feeders and you're in bear country, you should take them down by April 1st because we're already starting to get reports of some bear sightings. And of course, you know, bears can smell your suet or your black sunflower seed, I think like a mile or more away, and they are hungry and they will want it. And so if you've got feeders, now is the time to start thinking about putting them away for the spring and summer. And also, if you have bees like we do, the snow cover was grounding our electric fence and draining the power from it. So we turned it off for a while in the winter, and I think we've just turned it on in the week or two we've just passed since the snow cover is gone. But yeah, you don't want the bears to get into the bees at this time of year either.
Yeah. So, you know, shift your attention to gardening. Like my daughter this year, she and I have a plan for the garden right outside the window to plant things that birds are going to like. And if birds like them, you know, butterflies are probably going to like them too. But it's a combination of providing things for them right now, but also providing food for them as we get into fall and leaving those dead seed heads behind. You know, put a bird bath out with a bubbler in it, right? You can always provide water and other types of food sources and then cover for them too. Nice brush pile, you know, do like we do, collect everybody's Christmas tree from the neighborhood and make a little pile. It's the spot where all the sparrows hang out right now. So lots of other ways other than bird feeders to attract birds to your yard.
Well, Judy wants to know a little bit more about what plants in particular. Judy says, I've read that sumac, winterberry, wild grapes are options that can provide wild fruits, but aren't those plants somewhat invasive? Do you have other suggestions?
No. Okay. So she said sumac. Jane, run down that list again. Sumac.
Sumac, winterberry, and wild grapes.
Okay. All of those are native. Winterberry is native and it's got a winter persistent fruit on it. So that's really awesome. Wild grape, there is a native variety of that. And sumac as well. Sumac is hot during the springtime. Right now, if you want to see early thrushes that have come back, that's a great spot for them, as well as woodpeckers, maybe even some of these crossbills. I don't know. They're really busy on the pine cones here. But other species, I like to recommend dogwoods and viburnums. There's a number of native species. Those all have berries. Oh my gosh, my other favorite one for this time of year. You know how we get excited for these spring birds to come back and start singing? A plant or a tree that is kind of a sign of spring for me is serviceberry. And this is a beautiful tree with delicate white flowers that bloom during this time of year that then fruit into these lovely little tiny orange berries that cedar waxwings and bohemian waxwings and the thrushes love as well. So lots of different options there. I'll put a shout out to Audubon Vermont. I would go check their website because they have a lot of great ways that you can look up a species of bird and then find out the different types of trees, plants, and shrubs that you can have in your yard that's good for them.
And just to point out, you know, wild grapes, yes, there are native wild grapes, but I'm looking here at the vermontinvasives.org website, which has an interesting article by Elizabeth Spinney, who's an invasive plant coordinator for the Department of Forest, Parks, and Recreation, saying, you know, there are lookalikes, and often there are lookalikes, and one of them is porcelain berry, which is sometimes called wild grapes. And so you want to be careful, either if you're planting something that's ornamental or that you're planting in your garden or you're on your landscape, that you're actually planting a native plant, like the native wild grapes, not the one that's nicknamed wild grapes, but is something else like porcelain berry. And vermontinvasives.org is a really good website to look for that stuff at. Bridget, Sam in Burlington says, is there a good way to tell the difference between different kinds of seagulls if you see one flying overhead?
Oh my gosh, we got to go to gulls. Gulls are hard. I think they can be really challenging. That's like next level birding, but it's really super fun. So let's see, I can give you a couple of different types of gulls that we have that maybe flying over, you'll be able to kind of get them down. So when I think of like a nice beginner subset of gulls, I think about ring-billed gull, which is kind of a, not one of the smallest gulls, but a medium-sized gull. And it's got like a little black ring close to the tip of its bill. And it's gray across the back. So that's probably our most common gull here in Vermont. It can be coastal, but it's also like one of those inland lake gulls. The other one, let's see, the next one up that I would probably go to is herring gull, which is a little bit bigger than our ring-billed gull, and it doesn't have the black ring around the end of the beak. And then I think the third one that I would go to it as like a good foundation gull to learn that flying overhead you might be able to identify is the great black-backed gull. And there you go. It says it right in its name. Gosh, you gotta love birds that tell you what to look for right in the name. Like that one. So that one's black across the back. It's not gray. And it's great. It's bigger than the other two. So there are some other really cool ones. That you can look for in Vermont, like Bonaparte's gull, which is like this dainty, lovely gull with a small beak. And we've had like ivory gulls show up. Now don't get these guys confused with terns. The terns will be back in like a month or so on Lake Champlain as well. So those are my three gulls. So ring-billed, herring, black-back gull, that'll build you a good foundation, and then you can kick it up to some of these other ones. I got to tell you, great places to go for gulls are compost facilities and like sewage treatment plant areas too, other than like, you know, so for you got to throw a couple bizarre places to bird on your list as well. So good spots or during the winter when people are ice fishing, if the folks that are ice fishing clean the fish and throw the guts out on the ice, that's another great place to go where there's those little villages of people that are ice fishing. That's another great spot to go and look for.
I like when farmers are turning over soil with their tractors, too. That's often a time when you can see a lot of gulls. It's sort of like the inland sea instead of a fishing boat with all the gulls flying behind it. I sort of love that parallel sighting. Sam also wondered, though, too, if you're looking up and you see a flock of geese flying overhead, can you tell what kind of geese it is by, you know, if they're high up overhead? So you can't identify them by color or anything. Is there a way to tell what geese they might be by their flying pattern?
Yeah. So, I remember seeing Sam. Is this Sam Gail Rosen?
Who it is. Yes. Formerly of VPR. Now more time for birding.
So here's what I think is really kind of cool. So when we think about birds that fly in the V shapes or those diagonal like echelon shapes, there are larger birds. So we're talking geese, swans, cranes, and some ducks. And that's because their body is big enough to generate those like those little eddies and things that actually make it beneficial for their buddies to line up and draft them. Okay. So for us here in Vermont, I would think Canada goose, snow goose would be another one. Now we do have sandhill cranes in Vermont. And last year at the end of the summer, I actually saw an echelon, like that diagonal, like half a V of cranes flying overhead. It totally blew my mind. So I think the next thing that you really want to look for, you have what's possible in your mind, and then you want to start to look at the silhouette, right? So a crane silhouette is going to look really different than a goose silhouette, is going to look different than a duck silhouette kind of thing. And often when those birds are high in the sky, they're backlit, so you don't get a great idea of color. Then you want to wait for them to tip, right? So if they're going to change direction or tip, that might be when you get a little bit of blast of color or pattern. And with birds like ducks, swans, and geese, I would really concentrate on where the white is on the bird's body in order to help you make a quick identification. I hope that helps, Sam.
Yeah, thanks. Jim has been waiting on the line from West Burke. Hi, Jim. You're on.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call, and I'm going to miss you.
Oh, thank you.
Last time I called in with a story of robins blowing the nest outside my window. I didn't quite get to the inevitable and sad ending of the story. But so now I have two robins' nests in the eaves of my cabin on either end. And last week, a bird flew in and fluttered by and looked in each one, fluttered to one and then fluttered to the other. And never stopped flapping its wings. It just peeked in, and it flew away. And this is in nesting season, so I'm just guessing this bird was looking for lunch, or I was just wondering if this is normal bird behavior. And before I get my answer, I want to recommend a wonderful jewel of a podcast called Bird Note. It's 1 minute and 45 seconds. It's on every day. It's at birdnote.org, and you could get a whole lot of bird information there. And I think it's a great thing. And
Jim, thanks. Oh. That's a great suggestion. I think we may still air that on VPR. I used to hear it on my way to the dump every Saturday or every other Saturday, and I think it's still on, although I don't catch it. But yeah, Bird Note is great. And Bridget, what about Jim's story of another bird looking in the robin's nests? Maybe could that bird have been looking for eggs?
So I think probably more likely, right, this time of year are a couple things. One, right, sometimes insects and things end up in those nests and on those nests. So it's an opportunity to find food, right, or spiders or things like that. So it's an opportunity to find food. And then the other thing would be it's like searching out a spot to nest this year. And it's kind of, you know, checking out what's available, just like we do when we're like looking for a new house or we're looking for a new apartment. We're going to visit all the different spots and kind of size them up. Now, a bird may come back and build right on top of an old nest, or it may pull nesting material apart from that old nest to use in another spot for its own nest. So a lot of different options going there. I would keep watching and see what happens.
Paulette is with us from Braintree. Paulette, go right ahead. You're on the air now.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My husband and I have been hearing this bird for a long time, and we can't identify it. And I have it on my phone here. Can I play it?
Of course.
Nice.
It's not the woodpecker.
That's very clear. Well done getting that recording. Bridget, what do you think?
Yeah, so there are a couple of options here. This is another one with like a nice clear whistle, okay? And there are two other birds that I always mix up in my mind until I can get them straight each spring, which are Northern Cardinal and Tufted Titmouse. So Tufted Titmouse kind of goes back and forth like a tooty, 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 or a peter, peter, peter. And then Northern Cardinal will go into a set of notes that kind of down slur. Let's see if I can do it. Kind of like that. So I would continue to listen and look, see if you can really figure out what that pattern is, whether it goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, or if it drops into that kind of pew, 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 wit, wit, wit kind of pattern. You may have Northern Cardinal or Tufted Titmouse in your neighborhood. And both of those birds have switched over. I just heard one call back to me. That's right. You know it. Both of those birds have switched over. I feel bad now because they're switching over to their territory and mating song. So,
and here you are confusing them. Yeah, nice job, Bridget. Tracy is calling in from Burlington. Go right ahead, Tracy.
Hi, can you hear me okay? I'm
yep.
kind of in a weird cell place. Hey, so I just wanted to give a shout out to Bridget because she is not only the bird diva, she is just an awesome person online as a personality. It's really fun to hear you guys interacting. My comment is just to give a shout out to Bridget's slow birding class. I'm a novice birder and having a blast right now, kind of slowing down, looking at the usual suspects in my backyard and trying to look at stuff like behavior and body shape and patterns in my area instead of worrying about checking boxes on a list of birds. So it's been a great class.
Oh, Tracy, thanks. And Bridget, can you tell us a little bit
about your
classes? And you've got some upcoming events in April, May, and June. So we'd love to hear what those
are. Yeah. Tracy, thank you so much. Yeah, we're in the midst of our March Intro to Birding class. Because of the pandemic, I moved a lot of stuff online. The good news is stuff is starting to open up so that we will be able to do some things in person. So things that I'm excited about that are coming up the next couple of months, April, I have a Birders Book Club. I've been trying to shine the light on some historical female ornithologists that we just haven't told their stories enough about. So that's an online discussion group. In May, I've got a warblers class, like getting to know warblers if you find them confusing. That's another online class. I give you lots of homework and lots of online support for that. And then the newest one that's going to be happening in June that I am so excited about is going to be a behavior course, behavior specific. So how can we look and notice different behaviors and what are they going to tell us about birds? The live one that is coming up, North Branch Nature Center's Biodiversity University, is happening again this summer. It's a whole weekend of slow birding and it's in person. We have these, we tested it out last fall with some great COVID guidelines. And I'm feeling really excited to get back and connect with people in person again this year.
That's so cool. And we'll put a link up at vpr.org as well to Bridget's website so you can get more information on that. Jennifer wrote in to say, wow, I saw my first robin of the season. Spring is on its way. And Bridget, is there a way to differentiate between robins that have been here all winter and those who are just returning?
Yeah, Not really. I mean, it, you know, if we were banding them or had some way to put little, I don't know, bracelets or markers on them, you know, you could, you might be able to tell. But she's right. Like, you know, the birds that are here during the winter that we see are not necessarily the ones that are going to be breeding here. They're going to bump back a little bit further north, and we'll get our resident robins back.
So, Bridget, we were talking earlier about the fact that you can sometimes hand feed chickadees, or maybe I think you said the titmouse sometimes will come to your hand. And we've talked in the past about the fact that it's okay to put bird feeders up because birds will find food where they can. It's, you're not actually, you know, prohibiting them from being able to find food naturally. However, there are times where human-bird interactions are not good. And I just want to give you a last minute to talk especially about humans that have been bothering owls this winter.
Yeah. So I think, you know, when we get really excited about these new birds or about this new pastime that we have, I think what we need to remember is birds are out there surviving and trying to raise their young. And so it's important for us to give them their space. And I think even more importantly, when we notice that there's a lot of people there looking at this one rare bird, that maybe it's not our day to see that bird. And, you know, move on and hope for another day. Again, birds are there, yeah, for us to enjoy, but they're also trying to survive on the landscape. So let's give them a little bit of space and help others remember that that's what we're there to do with them.
Bridget Butler is a conservationist, a birding enthusiast, and a bird broker who can work to connect landowners interested in preserving their landscape for birds with birding experts who can help them do just that. And we have links up to some of the events she has coming up later this spring. Bridget, what a great run this has been. Thank you so much. I enjoy every single bird show we get to do.
Jane, I'm going to miss this time with you, but I am so grateful for all the time that we've had together. Thank you so much.
And more birding on But Why, the podcast for kids. I'm going to hit you up still.
All right, good. Please do.